Hey, everybody. It's your boy Xerxes here. I'm back. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, holy smokes, he did another advertisement. He's been like recycling the same 8 advertisements forever. And yeah, I am. And I'm going to keep doing that. But this one won't be recycled forever because after November 6th, it's no longer going to matter. That's right. This is me imploring you to, if you're an American who has registered to vote, you need to get out there and vote. And the reason why is simple. As you know from the other advertisements that you've been listening to over and over and over again, it's these elections. These aren't the sexy elections. These aren't the glamorous ones where you get to vote for the person, you know, for president, and they're going to be the president, and that's a big deal. And it is a big deal. But you know what? It's an even bigger deal, frankly, to be voting in all these smaller elections. And the midterms are the biggest of the small elections. I don't know how to say it any more plainly than that. You know, it means that, but because it's a midterm election, that means that almost everybody who listens to this show normally, like demographics wise, isn't going to show up. That most of the people who are like you are hearing me say this right now, will not be there. They won't be there because, you know, there's just not enough reminders. And, you know, I got to go in before work, or I got to go after work. And you know what? I get it. Like, because for the longest time, that was me too. Like that I was once like you. And, by once like you, I mean the last midterm election, which I didn't vote in. And it has a much bigger impact on our lives, on your life. And yet we never do it. And because of that, that's exactly why, like, stuff like that we care about, but only we care about, like, those things never seem like they always either get dumped on, ripped apart, trashed, because the people, like us, who actually care about that stuff, we never vote. We never do. We got to reverse this trend, and we got to do it not just in our lifetimes, we got to do it like this year for this election and everyone after that. And that means you have to vote. And it also means that you got to bug your friends to vote, just like I'm bugging you right now. I know it's annoying. I know. I get it. Like, I don't like being annoying, but I love games. I love talking about games, and that's what I'm going to go back to doing, you know, but I feel like I got to use the platform I have. It needs to no longer be said that, oh, that generation, such and such, they never go out and vote. So you don't have to really care about what they care about. Like, if you got to sacrifice something, sacrifice, you know, student loan forgiveness, who cares? And net neutrality, it's garbage. No, I don't even understand it anyway. The people who understand it, they don't vote. So, again, to our worldwide listeners, like, I'm sorry about this. It's just, it's very, very important. Nobody votes here. And yeah, I just think it's important. And I really want to, I know that, like, what's best for all of us is if we actually become relevant, become politically relevant. You know, just do it. Just do it. Just do it. Make me proud. Do me proud.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source, the brain train, your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed the colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have 3 rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Stop whining. Just jump in the tub.
You find yourself on what's probably the main street of a small town. Everything's closed except for the laundromat. As you drive past, you can hear the muffled voice of a weatherman coming from a TV somewhere inside. You wonder for a minute whether there's a storm coming, or if someone just lost the remote. You drive past. Cal hasn't said a word for hours. Just keeps clicking the map light on and off. It's episode 136. Me and Cal are here to talk about Kentucky Route Zero. So, yeah, That's what's on your mind, good. Cal?
Yeah. I'm actually wondering when the game was from.
Oh, yeah. So it was developed in, the first chapter, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
2013, I think.
Yeah, and, like, I think so.
Sorry, I actually didn't have the script up. I was too busy writing a monologue there.
It's sort of a little bit, you got, like, very close. I know you like him. Got a little bit of your Tom Waits in there, which is quite good.
You know. Thank you. I didn't even think about that, but that's a good point. I was trying to do I don't know what I was trying to do.
He did some interludes in some of his tracks where he's like, I went down to the corner shop the other day and
yeah.
And he talked about like the walls were melting and the man was like grim dust of acid. I'm like, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's always like, yeah, he's always like it's like I recorded this on an Edison wax cylinder. I have the only machine that still works that records Edison wax cylinders, and I'm using it to do this.
It kind of does sound a little bit like this game, which, yeah, is currently still in progress. This one was not... Oh, damn it, I didn't say who nominated a different game. I keep forgetting to say who nominated these games. We're being really bad about that. So you do know who nominated this one, because I believe this one was nominated to us on Twitter, I think by Kyle Latito.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's an artist. Check out his stuff.
I am keeping up with let's do the shout out to She-Dwarf.
Yeah.
Keeping up with it. It's really going places. Actually, a little bit of this game in She-Dwarf because it's a
it is.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, like, I know that he probably picked this game because, like me, he's a fellow Midwesterner. And so I grew up in Indiana, which is one state north. It's the state right above Kentucky. And it's kind of like a very different looking place. It's very flat. Like, Kentucky's where the glacier sort of stopped. So it flattened everything out, and then it stopped. And so Kentucky's actually absolutely gorgeous, like mountains everywhere and all that stuff. And Indiana's, like, it's very – I don't know. There's a weird like, kind of sort of pseudo-nostalgia for the state from people who've never been there. And like, you know, like you got like, it just pops up all the time in movies and stuff like Indiana Jones. Like, why is he called Indiana Jones? Like, it just doesn't make it. It's just a cool sounding name. I think
I have no doubt that George Lucas was just like reading a like map or just sitting around like Indiana. That sounds cool.
Yeah, Indiana. It sounds like a cool name. Yeah. So, I mean, Ohio is the real dump. I mean, why you drive through Ohio and you're just like, there's no adventure to be had there. I assure you. The only adventure is how fast can you get the hell out of Ohio? That's the adventure for you.
Isn't that Drew Carey did a thing about Ohio, wasn't it? Wasn't that set in Ohio?
Oh, he's from Cleveland, I think. But anyway, yeah. So
all right.
This game, it was I don't think we have the it vanished.
Well, I mean, the important thing is this one's technically not finished yet. A weird experiment in episodic gaming, which I think episodic gaming in general kind of crashed and burnt a little bit because early access and Kickstarter kind of feels like it made it kind of not relevant to do like an episodic piecemeal game.
With this game, I think it works though. I mean, we'll have to talk about what this game is and what it's like and all that. But yeah, it was a Patreon or Kickstarter. It was Kickstarter before Patreon. It was a kickstarted game. So, and it's basically, it's not quite an adventure game and it's not quite a text adventure and it's not quite a visual novel, but brother. So it's like, it's kind of like a meandering sort of adventure game where it's,
I consider it like a game.
If you were ever curious what it was like, kids out there, if you're ever curious what it was like to do stuff, at least in the United States, before GPS was like everybody had it in their pocket kind of thing, this is what it was like. Cause that's what it is. Like, you're just wandering around. You have to ask for directions all the time. You got a map that sort of makes sense.
Right. And so ostensibly you're a delivery driver on your last delivery. That is the extensive thing. Your name is, Conway. Your name is Conway. Yeah. That is the perfect name for this game. Like, it just sounds right. Like, Conway sounds like a guy who's on his last delivery in the middle of America. Like, it's just, that is the
name. Yeah, he's driving some old truck. I mean, it's really, it's interesting because the game clearly takes place, like, in the mid-2000s, aughts or something. But it's also, like, you know, the truck he's driving looks like it's from the 30s. And there's like some sort of, there's a lot of like weirdly, it's like the kind of game where just weird stuff happens and nobody comments on it. And you're expected to just roll with it.
I did want to throw out, like, since you have mentioned that, and I'll just get it out of the way. I wasn't sure if this was surrealism or not. I read that it might be intended to be like magical realism as a genre,
right.
Which is, I guess, right. I felt more surreal to me, but the genre might actually be, like it's just magical.
Yeah, magical realism as I'll have to call back to my English major heyday. The one thing in my life that I was truly good at. I think it's the concept of magical realism is kind of like the idea of just intertwining like magical stuff and like the workaday regular world. And it kind of like things just shift in and out of like the magical realm.
And nobody cares.
Without much explanation. Yeah. Nobody really pays it. It's like,
pays it no mind. That's
right. It's just like amazing stuff happens, and people are just like, "Yeah, I guess so." And
I think it's kind of interesting because that must be kind of, I think, like a take on modern stuff. Obviously, because you know, like we got, you know, phones is the big one where it's just like this does incredible things, but we just like, yeah, you just do that. Like I was actually thinking the other day because I was walking past some people who were just kind of like on their break or whatever, and they were just like staring at their phones, and it's like cool because obviously, like 20 years ago. That wasn't an option. Like, you would just be, like, kind of just hanging out. Like, you'd just be like, well, I'm just going to stare around.
You'd be bored.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that happens is simulated in this game. It's like, right. has boredom simulation periods. Yeah.
There is a character that has a phone, but they have, like, a giant, like, 80s phone is the
joke. Call it a brick phone.
Yeah.
So that's one character is Conway, the furniture delivery guy. And he's got to make a delivery to, antique. Yeah. So he's going to make a delivery. He's got to go to an address on like Dogwood Lane.
Yeah, I think it's Dogwood 5 Road. Dogwood Drive.
Yeah. So, and so it starts out in a gas station and there's some like old guy there. And like it sets up the game perfectly because it's like, I don't know what's going on. And for 10 minutes or so, you're like, oh, the game's going to explain itself any minute now. No, it doesn't.
So you just
kind of keep going. And,
I think the first moment that something gets really weird, you know, there's like this like bit that's supposed to be like a little creepy, but the bit that I think where the game kind of like settles into, oh, it's not going to explain anything, is the character Joseph who runs the petrol station. It's like a gas station. I'm sorry, we call them petrol stations. I'm like, crap. What do you call them?
Gas station. It would be.
Yeah, we call them a servo.
A service station would be a very old-fashioned way of calling it, but that would fit right in with this game.
Yeah.
And it's based on, like, a real old, like, you know, 50s-style service station.
It's got a giant, plaster horse head or whatever, like...
It's like, more like the I don't know what they call it. I'm trying to remember, because we talked about this
Pegasus?
Way back in the... No. I'm talking about like the architectural style.
There's
a lot of architecture stuff that goes into this game. Like the people who made this game must be like the biggest dorks ever. There's so much stuff in here that even I'm like, I cannot remember what this is about. Like there's jokes in there about like different kinds of architecture and stuff like that. It's just like the small jokes, but they're there.
Yeah. And, I will finish the thing. Like he says to you like, oh yeah, to get there, you just go down the 65, and you turn left after the burning bush.
Yeah, you find a burning tree. you turn right, and you go and you try to get to the Marquez farm.
You're like, burning tree? What is that, like a metaphor or something?
Yeah, but no. It's just a burning tree. It's just a tree that's always on fire.
It's on fire, always. And it's so like,
So the game is kind of divided up between two main screens. So there's like a map screen. And then there's like, you know, the adventure game point and click type pseudo screen, pseudo adventure game screens. And so like, you know, when you're in a new environment, you can get out of your truck and talk to your dog if you want to.
You have to talk to your dog.
Yeah, your dog who you can name, and it gives you some choices. And that's the thing about this game is like it makes a lot of hay out of the fact that it can remember the stuff that you said in the game. You kind of shape what makes it a game and not just like a story that you click through. With some illustrations and stuff, is the fact that like the game is shaped, like the story is shaped by the dialogue choices you make, not in like the, you know, Walking Dead Telltale way, but like more in just a, like you kind of choose what kind of person you are, and that's about it. It's like doesn't really make a huge difference, but certain things stick around and other things just vanish into the ether and you never hear about them again.
Yeah, it's really cool. I did check this because I was like, oh man, I got to find out because I cannot go into this without knowing that the way the choices do work. I'm not going to like break up the magic or anything, but the overall structure of the game is pretty solid. Like, you're not going to like make like a series of specific choices, like a visual novel where you'll get to the end and suddenly everything will be completely different and you'll be like, the whole story will like,
where did I go wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. It's more like you make little like comments and offhand notes. And maybe if you say something about your backstory or whatever, that might get brought up, and, you know, there might be, like, big changes to, like, scenery or something, potentially, but... because we don't actually know, because obviously the very fifth episode isn't landed yet, like, the final episode.
Yeah, we don't really know what's going to happen, but...
But the actual, like... yeah, you don't have to worry. You can quite readily say whatever you feel is the right thing to say. You can just iterate what you want. The game is not going to give you a bad end because you decided to say a specific thing in, you
know, as far as we know, like it would be very out of character for the game to do that. So anyway, like one of the interesting things about this game is I can speak from experience, like all the roads, like the interstate, you know, I-65, like that's like the main interstate highway that goes like north to south in that part of the country. And it does go right up from, you know, right through Kentucky. You go it goes right past Mammoth Cave, which is like a big deal in this game. All the county roads, I believe, are real. And probably a lot of like the smaller roads and stuff are real. The geography is real, like the rivers and stuff, like the Green River, the Cumberland, all that.
It's all real.
Okay. And so like Bowling Green is really where they say Bowling Green is. But then there's other stuff in the game that just like, you know, made up, like the Museum of Dwellings, right? Which is like one of my favorite locations because it's crazy. And but like, and that's the thing. And then the titular Route Zero, right? The Kentucky Route Zero is basically like an underground highway that has weird magical constellations inside and doesn't really like has a lot of non-Euclidean geometry involved in it. And
it's certainly a weird step in the game, because obviously I didn't read much about the game going in, and then when I was on the I'm gonna call it the Route Zero, I'm sorry, that's how I pronounce those.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm calling it Route Zero. You know, like when something was like, the hell happened here? Okay, this is getting interesting. Like, it's getting weird now.
Yeah, but it treats it just like it's another place.
Yeah, no, the game doesn't acknowledge it at all. Like the game, no, like yeah, that's what we're doing.
Trying to get to the zero, yeah. And so yeah, like all that stuff is like I said, it's the mundane mixed in with magic, kind of weird magic that the characters don't acknowledge as being magical. They can treat it as a nuisance perhaps, but they don't really treat it as and there's a lot of like weird random stuff that you can just run into in the game. And so there's, when you go and look up this game online, like, and see what people write about it and what they've said about it, you're going to get a lot about like the non-video game influences on it. So they'll be talking about, you know, magical realism and Gabriel Garcia Marquez, which is where you get the name of the kind of the main family of characters that you meet. And I don't really want to spoil too much of the actual story because I feel like that is more interesting to experience on your own. And I do want our listeners to play this game and kind of, I want to describe what it's like to play the game, but I don't want to describe too much about what happens in it.
Yeah. Like, I think that's fair. I mean, we don't try to spoil story based games.
And it's not like you're going to get like any like major, oh, big revelations or anything like that. It's more like it's, you know, the fun of it is just going through the story and just experiencing it and immersing yourself into it and getting to know the kind of the weird characters that you run into. But it's so, you know, like the short stories of Flannery O'Connor, there's like a whole thing where there's like a lot of architecture and also like theater stage dressing, like set design, where like the buildings you're in, depending on what you're focusing on, will like break apart. And, you know, things will show up in the background, like you're watching like a really, you know, well done, well set designed play, I guess, and things like that.
I'm glad you mentioned that the game does this really cool trick to it, where it kind of looks like static 2D environments, but they're all rendered in 3D, or at least most of them are.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sometimes it's like, the only game that I can really compare it to actually on that front is, for Guilty Gear, like the 3D one, where occasionally the game will just be like, oh, by the way, this is fully 3D, and it will like shift the camera like around the environment, and you'd be like, whoa, hold on, what? Oh crap, I forgot that this game is actually a fully 3D game, and it does, like, it's really restrained and reserved about how it uses its camera movements in a way that really enhances the kind of the feeling that, like, nothing really is as exactly as it should be in real life. Like, it constantly keeps you on this, like, edge of, like, fantasy.
You can't take anything for granted, but you're not supposed... It's supposed to be disorienting, but not alarming, I guess. Like, there's nothing in the game, like, at least that I've seen so far, like, that is, like, meant to be truly terrifying. There's some unsettling stuff in it, but it's very, very abstract in a lot of cases. So I would say, like, as a video game, its primary influence would be the original kind of text adventure, Colossal Cave Adventure, or just Advent, as it was known, which we talked about a lot when we did our GC9X episode about Zork. And I'd say Zork is another major influence. But the interesting thing about Colossal Cave Adventure is, number one, so that's a text adventure, but it was made by a avid spelunker, somebody who really... knew about caves and did a lot of caving and stuff. And they were obsessed with Mammoth Cave, which is the largest cave system in the world. And it's where people are still discovering new parts of it. It just keeps going and going. It's insane. And anybody who lives within like an 8-hour drive of Mammoth Cave should go and like just spend a weekend there and just go on every tour they have, because it is incredible. And it really is just like miles underground of just passages and stuff like that. So they made a text. So somebody made a text adventure back in the days of like mainframe computers in the 70s and stuff. And they made it, and it was just like you're exploring Mammoth Cave. And then somebody else gets their hands on it, and they start adding all this weird stuff to it, like random encounters and things that do nothing. So like at one point, like as I recall, you're making your way through the. Oh, and by the way, like the descriptions of the rooms and stuff in the game are so accurate that if you play the game and are very familiar with it and actually go to the real cave, you'll be able to figure out where you are based on the game descriptions. So that's how serious it is. But
you're talking about Colossus Caves, not
Colossal Cave. Okay. Yeah. Well, Kentucky Route Zero. Once you learn like the way that the, I guess you call it the overworld, the maps. Like if you know like what would it be? It wouldn't be I-70. There's I-65, and then. Like there's all these different, yeah, you would know your way around Kentucky's like major and minor.
That's pretty neat.
Highways. So
I will have to interrupt one second just to say that the programmer and writer for this one admitted that he actually played that Colossal Caves game on his dad's computer in the 70s. That was part of his formative experience.
I am not surprised at all, but that has to be the major influence. So, yeah. But then later on, so the game gets iterated upon by other people, I think. And it kind of turns into more like of a Zork-like experience. And one of the things they added were these random encounters. So one of them that I remember is that there's just a chance that whenever you enter a new area in the game, you'll just have this like, it'll just describe like a lumbering giant or ogre or something like walking through the room, not paying attention to you. He looks at his watch and mutters something about being late to a meeting and then like continues on his way. And it's just like, you know, weird encounters like that don't do anything. They don't mean anything, and they're just there, but they add this weird kind of layer of like, what is going to happen down here? And you know, this kind of, it's in a way it makes the game kind of spookier, because it makes you feel like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like I, just cause I've been in this room before, doesn't mean I know what's going to happen when I go back there. And that happens a lot in this game, where you'll just be, whether you're riding around in a truck or flying around on the back of a bird, Golden Axe style, you'll just see like stuff pop up on the map, and you can click it and it'll just give you like a couple sentences description. Sometimes you'll get like a little cutscene. My favorite one is where you're driving around, and then I clicked on a thing and it was just two men pushing a broken, like, you know, biplane down the road. And it's like they won't talk to you or look at you. The plane looks like it's going to fall completely apart within minutes. But still they keep going on, pushing their plane through the, like the light rainstorm or something like that. Just pushing a biplane down the road for no reason, no explanation, but that's it. You just see weird stuff and then you move on. It's like, see weird stuff and move on the game, you know?
Like it's cool because you mention it, and it's like, some of the stuff, with this game, it does, you know, it does bring callbacks to these sort of things. Like, you never know if something's going to then make any sort of return. Like, I can't mention it because I don't want to spoil, like, the little bits and pieces, but definitely there are things that you might glance at or notice or will be briefly brought up, and then the game will totally potentially deliver later on, like, oh, by the way, this is actually, like, this through a string of occurrences, that one thing that you saw was actually relevant to now, and, like,
right,
that's,
yeah.
It really rewards you for, like, at least trying to pay attention. Like, if you just, like, cruise through it, it's, like, you might miss little bits and pieces.
And I'm not 100% sure, but I think a kind of an undercurrent in the game seems to be you learn about who this character who you meet at the very beginning, Weaver Marquez, is like this weird, basically just a weirdo lady who...
She likes CRTs and televisions.
She's very into old television sets and stuff like that.
Which is also, I think, where you can kind of get your point of reference for the time. CRTs are considered to be very old tech in this game. Like, she's constantly bringing up about, like, you know, aging tech and things that are wearing down and that sort of thing. You know, like, there seems to be this...
It's hard to tell whether it's supposed to be that that's telling you when the game takes place, or whether that's telling you that these characters are eccentric weirdos. So, but I would say, like, it takes place roughly in, like, the early 2000s. That's my guess. But it doesn't really matter because it's not really like any reality that
actually what actually suits It Follows, the movie, the horror movie, where it's just kind of like set in like 80s, but other characters also have mobiles, maybe. Like, it's just that kind of like it's set in its own time period that just kind of exists for the purposes of the game.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, it's kind of like the 1930s. Like, that's the other thing, is like one of the characters you meet, like one of the first kind of little adventures you go on, you go into like an abandoned mine, and that's based on a real mine and has like real references to famous photographs that were taken in the 1930s during the Great Depression of work sites and stuff like that. And
it's company stores as well.
Yeah. All the, like, yeah. Talking about like you get plastic coins that are company scrip and they pay you in that, and you're supposed to use that to, it's all like, that's all really true. But one of the characters talks about her parents as being two miners who kind of went broke under the system. And that would make her parents very, very old.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a thing after probably the 30s or 40s, maybe the 40s at the latest. But that kind of practice was, I believe, abandoned by them. It still sucks to be a coal miner, but it's not like it doesn't suck in that particular way. So there's stuff like that where it's like eras get conflated. There's also like, you know, there's a lot of folk music reference type things that like every now and then you'll just be out in the woods or something and you'll hear some like guy on a banjo singing a song like a. You know, a folk song from that region, you know, like Kentucky, like for our non-American listeners or our American listeners who don't know anything about, their own country, which is a lot of people. So like Kentucky is also like, that's like where hillbillies live, right? Out, especially in the, kind of, Kentucky, West Virginia, Ohio area. That would be Appalachia. That's like, you know, that's out in the, like the mountains, like it's like where, you know, people make moonshine and go blind and stuff like that. and is like right now it's probably got huge meth problems and things. It's all kinds of depressing. Some of the poorest people in the nation live in this area. I didn't go around there a lot just because I knew I wasn't welcome. I'll just put it that way. But, there's just a lot of weird stuff out there. Kentucky's a very weird place. And it's a perfect for this kind of game. So yeah, like, I don't know what else to say. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but that's kind of, I think, the gist of it. Like there's some, maybe we should just talk about some of our favorite, like little instances or something, and then we can rank it.
Yeah.
You go like, first.
Well, I think, like, I guess it's just like my general impressions maybe of bits and pieces of it. Like in terms of like the flow, this game takes a little while to build up steam, I thought. Like, the first chapter didn't hook me very much. Like, if it was just that one, I would have probably been like, I don't know. By the second one, it was sort of like, it started to get there, and I was like, oh, I like this. This is starting to become something that I'm interested in. And then the third act, I was like, yeah, okay, I want to see where this is going now. I really want to kind of get through this. I had something I wanted to specifically say, but I have lost it. Maybe I'll remember. But it's like, oh, that's right. We didn't mention that this game actually does something really cool with the narrative where, you don't have a character, right?
Not strictly speaking, no.
So the game.
Yeah, go ahead.
The character you play as Conway, as we said, but the game is more than happy to shift the perspective to a different character, and it will do this without warning, with no notice, and so you might be in a conversation and you'll choose Conway's response, and then suddenly you'll choose the character Shannon's response. Like, she'll just suddenly, you're now controlling her.
Right.
And suddenly you will reply for her, and obviously that will shape her responses, so you have a conversation where you control both sides of the conversation.
Right.
Or you'll, at one notable point, you control the conversation of someone to the main characters, but not the main characters themselves, which is kind of funny. So
yeah, that's one of the weirdest things is when you get to the museum of was it domiciles or dwellings so it's like this museum where they have like all the different ways people can live in places, and what you get instead of, like, as you move through it, you investigate like the different exhibits in the museum, and then you'll get snippets of dialogue from people who are describing what you were doing when you visited, and they're talking from the future.
Yeah, so, they're having a flashback.
Like, they went into that place and looked around, but I guess they didn't find what they were looking for. And it does the same thing as if it just showed you, like, you click around and you can't find what you're looking for. But
yeah, like, that's so cool, because it's like, yeah, like, you, these characters have a back and forth about your characters, and so you can choose whether they're, like, not necessarily successful, but just, like, the kind of, like, how people have responded to them. Later on, you pick up a kid. Actually, around that time is when the kid joins.
Yeah, actually, at the end.
And the kid can be like, the kid just can be like, just like a kid, and they can just interrupt conversations. Like, you know, they can just say like complete nonsense, essentially, instead of saying something. Right. Like, you can have like a conversation that's got gravitas, or the kid can be like, yeah, I was running around the forest. I thought that was cool. I'm going to go look for lizards.
And yeah.
So you can just intersect that into the, proper conversation.
You're talking about Ezra, the kid whose best friend is a gigantic eagle.
Nobody questions it.
And, like, he's saying, like, oh, there's people who live in the Museum of Domiciles, but they can't sleep here. There's something unsettling or uncomfortable about it. So I like to put him on my giant eagle, and we take him over to the forest, and that's where people sleep. They sleep out in the woods. Okay, there you go. And then you talk to the kid, though, and you learn, like, so once you land in that, in the forest or the woods or whatever it is, like, first of all, that was where I got the most lost, because he describes how you're supposed to find it, and you got to follow the Green River east. Then you hop across the Cumberland, quote unquote. And I got really, really lost.
So on the upside, the game does keep track of little notes, that you can access. So it does do the writing for you. So if a character says, you got to go this way and this way and this way, the game will remember that, so that you can at least check the reference point names you were given. That's very
cool. Right, yeah. So, and then when you land, then you control him for a little while, and he's walking through the forest, and he just, like, time skips ahead every couple of, I don't know, screens or something.
That's a really cool scene, by the way.
That's
the way
really
the trees
cool
scene, keep intersecting, and it just keeps changing the, like, locations and stuff. It looks really nice. It's a very nice tree.
So, and then you talk to the kid, and you learn about his history, and it's really sad. There's a lot of stuff in the game about people. Like, so here's the other thing about the game. Like, it's very preoccupied with the Great Depression, which it was experienced over most of the world in the 1930s and stuff, but it's talking about the American kind of experience of that in the 30s, but it's also kind of conflating it
in America.
Yeah, it's also kind of conflating it with the recession of 2008 and onward, which is when the game probably was being written for the most part.
It feels very current, like a lot of the decaying areas outside of the major cities that's kind of happening right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, and talking about, like, they aren't talking about, like, the some of the major problems, which I think would just be too depressing, which would be, like, you know, opioid epidemic and crystal meth and shit like that.
It's kind of like nudged at, I think, in this game. Like, it's not going to cut it open, but it's definitely like, it's there.
There's a lot of talk about people who are, there's a lot of preoccupation in the game with the way that kind of American society has always been moving from one form or another of ways of screwing people into like lifetimes of servitude. So like it talks about the miners and how they were paid in company scrip, and that scrip was what they would pay their bills with. And it like, you know, the company that paid them could control how much it was worth and stuff like that. It talks about people like, you know, how you got by without health insurance back when. And that's what makes me think it was in the early aughts, because although people still go without health insurance now, it's not really the same anymore. Damn that Obama, he changed it all. Yeah. Not like they aren't trying, but it's really like even now it's really hard to dismantle what was built up. And, like the safety net programs were enlarged where the characters like the Marquezes would have been able to get, healthcare in some form or another. But there's a lot of talk about that, like how, and then like you meet a doctor and he's talking about how his like, into student loans from medical school forced him to kind of take a job with a kind of crooked pharmaceuticals company. I wish I could remember the name. It's not Temacil, but it sounds like it. And, yeah, like, oh yeah, the drug that you take and it turns your crushed ankle into like a giant glowing skeleton leg, and it just stays that way.
I like that, because I'm like, I can't tell if that's just like a metaphor necessarily. Like,
no, I think it's a glowing skeleton. I think it's literal.
It's so odd. Like,
he never says my leg looks like a glowing skeleton leg. He says, I don't know, I just don't feel like it's mine.
Yeah, like you can say that, or you can be like, it's fine. Like, and you can just say it, and the character will like roll with it.
And then the doctor himself, as you're drifting in and out of consciousness, will be telling you about, now, like, the pharmaceutical company was bought up by the power company, consolidated, whatever, and they've got kind of a different billing plan. It's like you're going in and out, and you, like, owe this huge debt to the... It's just about how, like, everything is just this huge Ponzi scheme, and it's not wrong. So it's just like these... Every time one of these things gets, like, reformed, then some new scheme opens up. But that is, like, it's very much how, like, the ways in which, especially in... parts of the country like Kentucky and other places, like people just feel like they're just constantly being shuffled around from one form of like indentured servitude to another, where you just like, you're always underwater. You're always in debt. But yeah, like I can't remember but it's conflating. So it's conflating like the, you know, like 2008 with like 1930 and all that. And there's stuff.
I mean, it's very fair. I think assessment, like it's just quite, it doesn't put like strong judgments on anything. It's just very like, it is a little bit at arm's length, but it's very like, maybe this is something that you should think about. This is like, just like, this isn't a great situation. And it's like, there's a melancholy. Like, that's the thing. Like, the whole thing is like, everyone is, yeah, as you said, underwater. Everything is like, well, we just have to do this because we can't do anything else.
Yeah. I mean, people accept it as, if it is normal, the same way in the game, they accept like gigantic ghost eagles and like underground highways and office buildings and stuff like
skeletons.
That. Yeah. So did you think of what you want? I mean, that I think is a part of the comment, which is like, this is insane, but you don't think about it because you're used to it. Yeah. But there's an aspect, and that is like, but it's like an oddly, like there's a lot of Americana kind of weird reverence for just the craziness of it all, which is a hard thing to explain to people who didn't grow up in that part of the country. But it is like, there's a kind of weird sort of beauty to all that like crap. So yeah, did you think of your favorite like little vignette or
well, okay,
joke,
so
or
I don't,
something?
Well, I will say something that I thought was cool, and then you can say something. I really liked that there's a deep sadness to Conway's backstory that he doesn't talk about. Like, he doesn't mention it. He's just on his last delivery, but you've got this slow bleeding in across the game where it's like little bits and pieces where you start to go, wait a second, what's happened to this guy? What is going on behind him? And there are several moments in the game where you can actually basically choose to either remember or just make comments about something.
Right. Yeah.
And like, there's one bit where it's like he keeps trying to have a flashback, and you can basically just ignore it, or you can engage with it. And the game does not care, I think, very much either way. It's like, it's up to you, the player, to decide whether you want to delve into what's happened to this guy, like how his history, there's a very clear thing. He's got something about some of the, something about addictions and things are going on in the background with this guy. And some of the characters seem to respond in a way that they know each other, even though they don't, which I think is kind of part of the weird, like, streamlining of the game. Like, it's just a... But I thought it was really cool, like, you can either, like, it just fades into black and then it starts going into a flashback, but you can also be like, nah, I'm just not listening to that. And it's really, like, really cool. Just, I love many of the moments. There's one very, very particular moment, but I don't want to talk about because it's so kind of cool that I'd rather just...
Yeah.
Just like, no, you deal with it. Because there's like two moments I'm thinking of that are just like, oh, I love that. That was great. And I don't want to talk about it because...
Yeah, you
really
want
should get it.
You really should play. I mean, it's out there. You should support it and check it out. So the like my favorite little moment or little joke in it is when you first go into the Route Zero and you find this like giant brutalist office building, and you go into it and you go into the elevator, and it'll just be like floor one, like clerks and assembly. Like floor two is like archives. Floor three, bears. Floor four is a conference room, and then the new art, you know, it's like, and if you go to the bears floor, you get out and there's just a bunch of bears and they don't do anything.
They're just looking around. They're just there,
but you see them and they're there. Bears.
That's certainly, I think, the moment, because that's in act two. That's where I was definitely like, I was sitting up like at that point. I was like, okay.
You got my attention. All right. At the bear elevator. Yeah.
All right. What's going on here? Where are we going? Like, this is where things were like, okay. Now things are like, are you going somewhere with this?
And they describe how the office building used to be a cathedral, but it was the whole government agency in there is like the office of like reclaimed and refit or repurposed structures or something. And so it's like, they're just periodically will just say like, oh no, we're going to like take this place and turn it into this.
It's like reclaimed spaces or something.
Yeah.
Like it's like,
something. So it used to be a cathedral, but they needed it for this office building, and so they relocated the church's congregation to this like
the storage unit, yeah, which apparently used to be the bureau.
And you have to go there and look for something, and you go there and you find a janitor, and the janitor talks about how it was a church for a little while, and then people just kind of like it got too big, and people sort of kind of lost their focus and lost their center and stopped coming. But it's okay, because I've got tapes of like the various homilies that the priest would give, and I play them every night at the appropriate time. So you're not really missing anything. And
I love it, because yeah, he's like, as far as he's concerned, he's like, I don't care about it. I don't know what's going on.
So is your whole family religious? It's like, oh no, actually, I don't really know what they're talking about, but I feel like it's something I got to do. It's like, you work here? It's like, kind of. I don't really collect a paycheck or anything, but... I wouldn't call it a hobby because I feel like I have to do it. It's kind of like there should be a better word for it than hobby.
such a great like. There's so much to unpack with that like little bit of scenery there. Like that's such a great moment, I think, in this game.
Yeah, and that's kind of it. Like that whole conversation is kind of like the aesthetic, like mission statement of the game, which is like, yeah, there's a bunch of weird old stuff around. And it might not seem to serve much of a purpose anymore, but do you really want to live in a world without it? Like, you might not. And like, it's stuff like that. I mean, it's, or like certain things just seem to linger on no matter what you do.
And you know, actually, what I really like is in that sort of perspective, it doesn't place a judgment on new things. I think that's really cool. You know how lots of these stories are fixated on like, you know, things used to be a way and that way was either better or different and it hasn't been replaced. In this, it is just more like, yeah, some things go away, some things don't. That happens.
Yeah, don't you meet some like, I don't know what they are, like some kind of like avant-garde, like college rock type musicians or something and on a motorcycle and all that. And it's like
you switch to those at one point. You're them. Yeah.
And, which happens a lot in the game, but like, it's like, it doesn't ever. And that's another thing to know is they talk a lot about Louisville or Louisville is going to look like to you outsiders, but it's pronounced Louisville. And that's a city on the, right underneath Indiana on the, Kentucky side of the Ohio River. And it is, it's kind of a college town, kind of like, it's kind of like the only like cool city in Kentucky, like in the traditional sense, but they had like a music scene there that kind of comes and goes, ebbs and flows. And there's, when I was, a youngin', it was like, I think there's a band called Slint that was very, is kind of very influential at the time in the 90s,
by the way. Like Slint.
Yeah. I guess maybe, but it's like, and then, out of that came a bunch of people. I think there was Will Oldham, or who goes by Bonnie Prince Billy, was kind of like a weirdo who seems to be fit right into this game. And there's stuff like that that I think influenced this game too, that you really can't see unless you were living through it. And I really appreciate that as somebody who is living through it and feels his life passing by faster than he can keep track of things. And yeah, where do we want to rank this one?
This was a really incredibly tough one. I had been thinking, like, when I was getting through the first act, I was like, oh, I don't think this is that great. I think it's good, but it's not gonna be too high. But the further I got through it, I'm like, oh, this is really good, isn't it? It's like, that sometimes bothers me, because I'm like, oh, no. I can't put it anywhere. It's gotta go somewhere.
It's kind of like, you play the game during the day. First of all, like, congratulations on not having a job, but... but if you're playing the game during the day, I don't think it's going to be that, it's not going to be very gripping, but you play it at night, put headphones on, play it on a laptop if you can, be pretty close to the screen, and just kind of, there's a lot of great sound work. I mean, the graphics are deliberately primitive and kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, like.
I mean, you can kind of call them low poly or whatever. Yeah. Most of the characters are only mostly formed, but in the game, sort of like stylization. That's not like, it's such a,
yeah, the game deals a lot. It does a lot with shadows and stuff like that. Like one of my favorite little things that you see fly by is when you're seeing like crows fly by at the top of the museum. And then once in a while, like the shadows will be really big and you're thinking it's like a distortion until you meet the giant bird. but at one point there's like somebody carrying what is either a house or like a note card or something. And it's just there. So much more goes into it with just the sound design, and like the sound of like the crickets and the cicadas and stuff is a big part of it, which to me brings back a lot of memories. And, the sound of like rain hitting, a rooftop or something, or like a warehouse, or like the sound of being, in a cave, the weird kind of claustrophobic sound that exists even in like huge chambers of Mammoth Cave, where the humidity and darkness and dankness of it just seems to have like a weird presence that you can hear. It's all there, and the game does a lot with it. I don't want to go too crazy, because I don't want to oversell it, because I feel like if we do that, people will kind of be like, oh, this is too highbrow for me. And it doesn't, I just because there's a lot of literary stuff in there doesn't mean that you won't. It's kind of like, I always say, like, it's like, this is like if Bob Dylan wrote a video game. he wrote a movie once, and it basically is just like this, where just people just come and go and say things that don't really, there's like a whole scene where he meets Val Kilmer, who's playing a, like an animal handler for like a, some kind of TV production of some sort. And he gives this like 5-minute speech about how great animals are and how much people suck and how like a crack at the bottom of a dried up riverbed is more beautiful to him than any human being. And the great thing about animals is that they don't know that they're going to die. And then like John Goodman and Dylan himself are listening to it. And then they walk on and John Goodman goes like, what's up with him? And Dylan says, I don't know. Guy likes animals, I guess. It's like, that's it. And it just goes, that's the entire movie. And, that's what this game is like, but you don't like, you're not supposed to get it. So I don't want to like put
it up. Well, that is something that I struggle with is like, with this one, I was very much, it is kind of like almost like a low key atmosphere album. Like it's not, I don't feel like it's trying to like, say like, it's not really running in and saying like capitalism is bad or, don't beat up your parents or anything. Like it doesn't have like, it doesn't have something that I think it's trying to sell you on. It's just like, here is the place. Here is the time. Yeah. And then you're just like, it just washes over you and you're not supposed to kind of like go, oh, I get it. I'm smart now. Like it's.
Yeah. There's hints that you find out about what, the ways in which you and Shannon might've been brought together by other characters, but they're very subtle, at least in the three chapters I've been through. And, I want to put it in like the BBBBB range is like kind of like, I feel like it's a very different, or Papers, Please, like that. These are the games that I think about. Papers, Please is currently at number 44. I want to put that one, has to go higher to me than Kentucky Route Zero. It has to stay up there because it accomplishes so much. And it is really funny and also like
pretty brilliant the way the gameplay works out. But where's like a visual novel type thing? Do we got anything like that?
We have a very high placed visual novel, but it's also like one of the best visual novels.
Oh, Steins Gate? Yeah, no, no, I'm not even gonna touch that.
So, it is a tough one. I don't think we don't have any other visual novels. The only thing we can really do is start poking around. We put Her Story at 96. We have Loom at 101, and then we start to hit a few more of our visual novels when we get to.
Let's go up a little bit. So I'm thinking like I'd put it above Her Story simply because I think Her Story sort of, it's like in a way a much more clever idea, but it also sort of runs out of steam in the sense that once you've done it, you've done it. Whereas this game, like every time a new episode comes out, you should probably start playing from the beginning because it won't take that long and you'll see different stuff and you'll feel more immersed in the game. You just got to get in the mood for it. What about
what I think is very special?
What about right below Echo the Dolphin? Yeah, go ahead.
Echo. I love Echo. Is that what I did want to mention is that because you did say Steam and like pushing through things. This one was really cool because most art games that I know of, and it is an art game, it's very clearly like it's a very conceptual kind of like deal. They have a hard time hitting like more than an hour or two in length before they will be like, nope, that's way too long. This is just, it's overstayed its welcome, far too long. Whereas this one, it's clocking in at like 8-10 hours and it just keeps on going and you just keep going through it and it doesn't feel its length at all. I have not been bored or frustrated or anything through this experience. It has just been like a connected string of scenes, and I really do genuinely want to see where it's going, how this is going to interplay.
Which is incredible for how slow moving of a game it is, how deliberately slow it is. You have to wait for everything. You're just sitting there waiting for your dog to catch up with you. Sometimes.
And you will, because it's just like, you care about this dog, because he's freaking like 14 years old or something. This dog is dead on his feet, and you feel guilty dragging him around on your little adventure the whole time. And you're always like bending over to talk to him. It's like, how you doing? I called the dog Homer because I was like,
me
I'm
too,
pick
yeah.
Homer. Yeah, you gotta pick Homer. So, it's just like, how you doing, Homer? It's been a real long time. I know, buddy.
So my suggestion is right under Echo the Dolphin. I would make it the new 83.
You would make it the new 83. I don't have like any issue with that. That's my tough thing here. Like,
you just kind of put it somewhere.
Would I recommend it? Yes. Would I recommend it to pretty much anyone? Probably. Like,
yeah.
If it's too slow for you, that's like, I can't do anything about that. But I was warned that it was too slow, like in the sense that people were like, watch out, it's a slow game. Like, it's going to be like real slow. I'm like, this is slow, but it understands pacing on a level that most games really don't. Like, I was very impressed by how well paced everything was, you know, like it very rarely tries to make you backtrack through things, like, you know, like point and click games, I'm obsessed with going between different places and constantly having to loop back around, and inventory puzzles, everything sucks. This game, it constantly gives you new experiences, it's constantly got the characters there, and they're always ready to just say something different to really, like, it is very much a game that I thoroughly enjoyed. Even like, and it, you know, it doesn't, it's not overly funny. It's just like,
no.
It's really good.
Yeah. So is that your way of saying you agree with me?
It's my way of saying I agree with you because I don't have, like, I couldn't put anywhere else. I don't
it almost defies, like, it puts the lie to the list where it's like, yeah, the list is arbitrary. Okay, guys, that's the big joke. So that's where it goes, right underneath Echo the Dolphin, right above Gunpoint. It's the new 83. Thank you, at Kyle Latino, and thank you, listeners, for sitting through this. Check this game out. And we'll wrap at you some other time. Later. That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rood, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GCNRX and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.